I'm Richard Dugan, and welcome to Tell Me Your Story. This is a holiday weekend, and we're going to be learning about a story about how to get through and into your 50s, if that's where you're headed. And then we could actually apply this to just about any age. We're going to talk with the co-author of 50 Ways to Leave Your 40s, actually, so it's even younger. And we'll be doing that in just a moment with our special guest, Sheila Key, here on Tell Me Your Story. Stay tuned.
Walk with me, talk with me, tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Well, in this book, they're going to show you how to turn, to take 50 ways, basically, to leave your 40s, your 50s, your 60s, to progress through the various milestones that we put so much attention on, but from a positive standpoint. They give a fresh perspective for making this major life transition 1 year at a time, 1 decade at a time, as far as opportunities, growth, and what we like to do here is celebrate and celebrations. And Sheila, welcome to our program.
Hey, thanks for having me, Richard.
Now, I am going to speculate here that you and your co-author Peggy Spencer, MD no less, you have just approached or entered your 40s. Would that be a fair assessment?
No, actually, Peggy has just left them.
Just left them.
Yep, on June 1 this very summer, mm-hmm. I guess late spring.
June
and
Fool's
then,
Day. Okay.
And I'm 48 and a half. Okay. You know how little kids like to say that they're something and a half?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm 48 and a half.
I was always told that when you got to about 14 or 15, if not sooner, you dropped the half thing, and I'm just there.
Yeah, well, you know, it's cute how a kid can be, you know, five and a half until the day before they turn six, you know?
Well, this is true. This is true. Well, we're going to talk a little bit about this whole process that we have called aging and growing. Some people, they'll say it, I'm growing old, I'm growing older, the negative connotations. Mm. There's a program on this station called The Third Age, and yet you folks make reference to living it up in life's second half. Well, in any event, I haven't even reached that phase, and it definitely would be the second half for me because I have to outlive my great-grandmother who lived to be just over 100 years of age.
Really?
And I used to tell people that as she was growing older from her 80s to her 90s that I was going to do this and that she was making it really hard.
Yeah, that you're going to outlive her. Well, good for you. You got those longevity genes going for you.
I certainly hope so. Well, we're going to talk about this whole process from the four aspects as you break it down, you and Peggy break it down in the book. And basically, most people know body, mind, soul, and then there's heart. And we're going to talk about those elements here on Tell Me Your Story as we continue talking with Sheila Key and 50 Ways to Leave Your 40s. It's not quite how to leave your lover, per se, although I suppose that could happen, but we certainly wouldn't want that to happen to some of you because you are enjoying the time you're spending with the loved ones that you're with. Stay with us. We hope you love being with us here on Tell Me Your Story, streaming live on the internet at richarddugan.com. Don't go away. We'll be back right after this. Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, and with me is Sheila Key, co-author of 50 Ways to Leave Your 40s. I was going to pull up the Paul Simon song, but I decided not to, just simply because it just didn't quite fit. But what I wanted to try to touch upon is the mind-bending setback thoughts that we put in our own heads or that are put there by our society, our culture, our media, as far as getting older. There are milestones as we start our lives, you know, and it's a big deal when you reach, say, 4 or 5 years of age and you start going to school or six, and then you get into your teens and you first learn to drive at 15, 16, 18, you get to vote, 21, you get to drink, 25 is a big deal, quarter century, 30 is the big decade, then 40, 50, 60, 70, 75, et cetera, et cetera. And I used to look at those, and I still do. I look at all of those as incredibly wonderful experiences and events. But there are a lot of us out there, a lot of folks out there who don't. They dread going down that path.
Absolutely.
So tell me how this concept of 50 ways to leave your 40s, and I know it's not exclusive just to the 40s, but tell me how this concept came about and how the two of you, you and Peggy, got together.
Oh, well, you know, that's a good story. I actually started the book on my own long before I even met Peggy. And the thumbnail version is that she and I blogged into each other. We found each other. Isn't that a perfectly modern story?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That we would find each other online. And, you know, she could have been anywhere. She could have been in South America. But she was right across town.
It's so, right up there with internet dating.
Yeah, exactly. Internet co-authoring. This really happened this way. I helped a friend. I used to be in radio myself. That was my first career. It's what I got my degree in. And after 10 years in radio, I had moved on into freelance writing. And one of my old radio pals came through Albuquerque, where I make my home, and he was promoting his first book. This is back in the year 2000. And by I helped him, you know, put together some book appearances and or author appearances. And by the time he left, I was thoroughly infected with the author bug. Suddenly the light had gone on. And mind you, I was 40. Mm-hmm. I was 40 at the time. And so still kind of looking for what I was going to be when I grew up. You know, I mentioned that my first career was radio, and then I had done some freelancing for a few years, and then I had become a mom. And by 40, I really was going, well, what about when I get my kids into school, then what? You know, well, the answer came. This friend came and left, and I knew I must be an author, so I wrote on a piece of paper. This is the absolute truth. I wrote, I must write a book. What should it be about? And within an hour, another friend arrived, and she, I realized as I opened the door, we were expecting her, but we opened the door, and she's standing there with a laptop, you know, in her hands, and I'm thinking, oh, that's right. She's an author, too. Mm-hmm. Well, within minutes, truly, she was telling me about having turned 50 earlier that year. And out her mouth came these words. She said, oh, Michael and I have this fabulous title for a book, 50 Ways to Leave Your 40s. Isn't that fabulous? And I said, that is fabulous, you know. And so we talked all about her book. Well, it became clear very quickly that she wasn't ever going to write this book. She said, oh, it was just a title. You write the book, she said. You write the book. So it really was like that. It was like I asked, and I got the answer. And how lovely that it was so quick. You know, life isn't always like that, right?
Well, I think that in the process of what we're doing with this program, providing folks with new paradigms and for a new world and giving them these different choices, that hopefully we can educate folks and give them information to make those dreams come true in just that way. That hearing that life actually can be that synchronistic.
It can. And in my experience, when it's synchronistic like that, it seems it's an indicator that you're on the path. Mm-hmm. You're on the right path, you know. Other things, you know, you try and go into, like you might try to do this or try to do that, and it kind of feels like swimming upstream or bumping into walls or something. But sometimes you just decide, well, maybe I'll XYZ, and doors just start opening. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, there you are. So, you know, when my friend, the one who brought me the title, when she begged off and you know, bowed out, there I was. I was almost 41, and I thought, well, what am I? Who do I think I am writing a book called 50 Ways to Leave Your 40s when I'm not quite 41, you know? So the project went underground for a while, and that's another thing. Projects, even though they're absolutely the right thing, it may not be the right moment. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I could make a long story, but I won't. I brought it back up from underground when I was 45. And sure enough, my 40s were half gone. And will you believe this? The day of that magic that I just told you about was October 13th, 2000. And 5 years later to the day, my publisher signed my contract.
Oh,
New World Library.
Wow.
New World Library, October 13th, 2005. And, of course, you do the math, and sure enough, my 40s were half gone. I said to my husband, you know what? And I make one of those little, like, the little walking symbol in crosswalk.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I'm leaving my 40s.
Well, once you reach 45, that's, I guess, the way they look at it, because you've gone to the middle, and
that's
now
right.
You're going to the other end.
Now you're going to the other end. So, you know, once you sign a contract with a publisher, of course, then you've got a deadline and the obligation to write this book. And I went, oh, yikes. Now I really do have to write it. I've been talking about it for years. But that's when, you know, an editor, my first editor there at New World Library, suggested joining a writing group. And she said, this can really keep a project moving forward. And I said, okay. So dutifully, I looked up writing groups here locally, and I found one and went. And do you know, what I found were two women blogging. And they were all about blogging. And, you know, it was a nonfiction writers group, but there they were blogging. And they said, oh, well, if you're going to be a nonfiction writer and you're going to be serious about it, you must have a blog. And that's how it was that I came home and started a blog. And after a few days of, you know, quote, blogging, I thought, you know, this is crazy. I'm not supposed to be writing a blog. I'm supposed to be writing a book. So I left my blog just hanging out there in cyberspace and turned again to the project of the book. Well, again, synchronicity. It's because I needed to find Peggy. So I needed to kind of put that, you know, I don't know, fishing pole out there, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And she followed almost exactly the same footsteps, only from a different point of view or a different perspective. She was the very sort of person I was writing the book for. She herself was 48 at that time. And unlike me, she had been in the same career all her adult life. She's a medical doctor. And, you know, she said she arrived at 48 feeling a little itchy for something more, something else, you know? And not that she wanted to leave medicine, but she wanted more somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And so she decided maybe she would develop her writing professionally. And so she looked up the very same organization that I did, went to the writing group, found the two women blogging, and started a blog. But unlike me, she kept at that blogging, and that's how we bumped into each other. And we thought, well, how perfect is this? I could use, you can tell I'm a real talker. I started out in radio.
No,
well, I'm a talker. I needed to talk this book. I needed to live this book. I needed to converse this book. So I needed someone on the receiving end and the feedback. You know, I needed a feedback loop. And she served that for me. And then there she was, having the synchronicity of her midlife. She says, you know, I think I'd like to start writing. And boom, a book project falls into her lap. And then, just cherry on top, New World Library, who had never had a signed author, call him up and say, could I bring another author into this project? And by the way, she's never written anything for pay. They said yes. They absolutely did not block me. They made it happen.
Well, they must have known that the content of the book, just by virtue of the title, if you will, was going to provide some great information for folks. And I guess
excuse me for interrupting, of course, from their point of view, I'm sure they saw the value of having an MD on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, I had envisioned the book and had pitched the book as a very quick read, something very lots of brief nuggets, if you will,
mm-hmm.
right? And many people have said to us, you know, with a title like 50 Ways to Leave Your 40s, they expect it almost to be a puff piece. And they've come to me several times, or different people have said, I'm surprised at that there really is some good, weighty, you know,
some real depth
useful,
to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Peggy really helped provide that, you know, coming at it as she did from a medical perspective. You know, with the 50 chapters, and we can get into, you know, what's in them. I mean, you know, we offer up sort of five different types of information in each chapter. One of them is what we call The Doc in the Box, and that's Peggy's medical column. And many of her columns are what you would expect from a medical doctor, trained in the allopathic tradition, the Western tradition. Mm-hmm. She gives you sort of a roundup about a health issue in midlife, like urinary tract health, in a chapter called Go with the Flow, mm-hmm. right? But in many other chapters then, what she did as a Western doctor with an open mind, she explored the Eastern realm. She sort of drilled down through the Western literature about, you know, what are we finding out about? Is there really anything to this acupuncture? Mm-hmm. Is there anything to this, using magnets as
right.
a therapy? And so on. So it's a real good mixed bag. We call it a treasure trove.
Absolutely. And one of the thoughts that has occurred to me in the context of many of the programs we have done, and that is I'm wondering how many of these conditions, as real as medical science has shown us that they are in these particular age, in this phase and transition of life, are brought on more because we're told this is what you will. I mean, I'm sitting here watching some of these commercials for male enhancement and prostate problems as you hedge your face. I'm going,
I
refuse. I'm not buying into that any more than I bought into the messages every September and October telling me that flu season is coming. It's not coming to my house.
I hear you, buddy. I hear you. And it's like they say, you know, there's something, I think it's called presbyopia. It's when you start getting farsighted,
mm-hmm.
farther sighted.
I think so, yeah.
You know, presbyopia, you know, are you having trouble focusing at the near distance? You will.
Yeah, it's like they're programming, it's mm-hmm. like the marketing community is programming us to accept these. And we're learning as we go through the various guests that we have that on a cellular level, as we change our mindset, as we change our thoughts, our beliefs, and our concepts, the paradigms that we deal with, the new ones, that we can change and alter quite literally our own cellular structure from a healing process where we have this one condition that just, it's almost chronic to a healed. It doesn't exist
yeah.
anymore if we continually are changing the cells out. So it sounds to me like Peggy actually investigated all of this as well. And
yeah.
so I begin to wonder sometimes if harping on, if you will, maybe not harping, but focusing on them from time to time, these various conditions as we head into out of our 40s, into our 50s, or again, whatever phase in our lives that we are, when we start buying into those things, we then start buying into having to buy the things that will
That's
cure
right.
us of the things that we mentally and psychologically bought into.
That's right. And you know, it's interesting how it's bought into. It's because a lot of it is advertising, and that we do buy it. We buy it on in a couple different ways. And I could get on my horse and ride off in 12 directions. There's the material is so rich.
Yeah.
You talk about the, because our cells are trading out over time, you know, that if we can change our thinking, you know, we can actually change, you know, ourselves on the cellular level. Another concept that is like a sort of a thread through our entire book is this idea of neuroplasticity. You know, they used to think that the changeable mind,
mm-hmm.
plastic mind, that, you know, they've always known that little babies and children have a mind that is, or a, not a mind, but a brain, literally the architecture of the brain is still very malleable. And if a child sustains brain damage at a very young age, or, you know, requires some sort of drastic invasive surgery, that the child's brain has a high degree of being able to reassign its functionality to a different area that is not damaged.
Mm.
And they used to think that as we grew into adults, we lost this plasticity utterly, and that our brains became immutable. And thank God they were wrong. What I like to say is it's a great time to be middle-aged, because not only have these Eastern ways begun to permeate our society, vastly expanding our healthcare choices, but also even the Western doctors are beginning to agree that there are significant, important connections between the emotions and the body, and the mind and the body, you know, the thought processes and the body. Well, both of these, the emotions and the thought processes, mm-hmm. where do they live? They live in the body, you know. So one thing I could say is simply trying new things, simply challenging yourself. What I like to say is, even if you suck at it, you're doing yourself good, because our bodies are so amazing, and they are always trying to rise to the challenge. And so if you're not challenging them, you're not telling them to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're standing on one foot and you're wobbling because you're so imbalanced, you are sending the signals that say, come on, we need to get these other neural roads up and running, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like all the juice it likes to go. And like a freeway system, it wants to get on the freeways because that's what they think, that's what it's always done.
Exactly.
Habituated.
Yeah.
But if you can interrupt the habitual processes and send the juice by the scenic byways,
mm-hmm.
things might go slower and they might be more wobbly. But it's good growth-enhancing signals that you're sending to your own self.
Exactly. And we're going to continue talking more about that. And also in our next segment, we're going to talk about our psychological and spiritual growth as we go through the various decades of our lives and how that changes. And we'll be talking more with Sheila Key and the book, 50 Ways to Leave Your 40s. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay with us. This is Tell Me Your Story, streaming live on the internet at richarddugan.com. Stay with us. Check out the blog, too. I'd like to hear from you, hear your comments about our radio programs. Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, and the views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, ownership, or advertisers of this station. And we are here bringing you this program every Saturday at 3 p.m. You can go to richarddugan.com, check out our schedule of programs that are coming up in the coming months as we head into the cooler fall weather. You can also go to the various websites of our guests, including Sheila Key and 50waystoleaveyour40s.com. Stay with us. More Tell Me Your Story coming up. This is Tell Me Your Story. I am Richard Dugan, and my guest is Sheila Key, and we are talking about 50 ways to leave your 40s. Sheila, there is one perplexing aspect to that, and that is, before we get into the whole spiritual aspect here, there are some of us who don't want to leave. It's kind of fun. I like being here in my 40s.
Well, I know, but you probably also really enjoyed being in your 30s, too.
I don't know about that. It was okay.
Is that right?
No, I actually
hear it from a lot of people, though, that they keep thinking that they have arrived at the decade.
Yeah.
And then the next one comes along, and they go, oh, wait a minute. This one's even better.
Yeah. Well, and of course, even as a kid, I was watching my parents and their parents, my grandparents and so forth, and thinking how neat it will be to get older and experience all of the things that they're experiencing. And of course, now that I've experienced a lot of it, if I knew then what I know now,
yeah.
I would probably do the same things.
Yeah.
Just because the experiences are really quite wonderful. But one of the...
What a refreshing outlook, though.
Well, and it is.
Because don't you think that, in general, people, at least around here, you know, here in America, I don't
mm-hmm.
know, well, in the West, that we tend to think, oh, no, I'm getting old.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I'm watching with, I don't know if it's, I don't think it's a, it's more of an observer's eye, I would say. I'm watching the commercials.
Yes.
I'm watching the television programs, the sitcoms, et cetera, et cetera. And the movies that are coming out and who's being targeted. And I'm thinking, I believe I have just been left out in the cold. And yet,
they're
I'm
not talking
here.
To you, huh?
They're not talking to me, at least unless they're talking to me about my enlarging prostate.
Right, exactly. The thing you don't want.
Let's talk about our enlarging spirituality. Now, as a child growing up, I was born and raised Catholic. I went to Catholic church. I went to catechism. I did all those things. At the age of 16, my mother came to me and said, you know what? You don't have to go if you don't want to. And a few years later, she explained to me the reason was because we didn't want you to turn away from, push away from the church, which I never did. Mm-hmm. I just stopped practicing. Mm-hmm. I love the church. But my spirituality has gone in some different directions, as it seems as though folks who begin to go into their 20s, their 30s, their 40s, they start, now some will stay mm-hmm. with the traditions of their family. Mm-hmm. They feel, and they say, hey, that's important to me. That's my mm-hmm. foundation. That's my rock. Wonderful. But there are others who say, this isn't serving me anymore. I need something more. Are we seeing more of that as our population at large moves forward through these phases of age?
Well, I wonder. I mentioned the, what's the right word, that these Eastern ways have begun to permeate the Western society. I think that when you have that kind of cross-cultural currents, it can't help but make us, some of us at least, question whether, you know, the way we've been doing it or the, you know, the box that we've sort of put ourselves in or at least find ourselves in, questioning. And I like how a part of the word question is quest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you begin to, and I think it's also a function of midlife that perhaps we get our career sort of into a groove perhaps our children are reaching a point where they're either flying from the nest or they're more self-sufficient than they were, obviously, as younger children. It just opens up a little more time for us to take back for ourselves and the development of our spirit and our spiritual selves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I know, too, that there are those who are wanting to make that kind of a journey. But, of course, there is the fear, especially with family, brothers, sisters, parents mm-hmm. in particular. Mm-hmm. I don't want to dishonor them.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say that I was born into a family, and my parents have just, they have really been quite supportive and encouraged.
Mm-hmm.
The conversations that we have now, both my wife and I, with my parents, that we have with them on spiritual matters, is so far afield from, in one sense, from, you know, what I was raised with. And I find that exciting, and I'm hoping that that's happening with other folks, too.
Yeah, I hope so, too. I would say one hopes that by time you arrive in midlife and move into that second half, that you understand. I tend to bring this back to the serenity prayer,
mm-hmm.
that idea of knowing that there are certain things you can influence and a great deal of things, a number of things that you know, they're not yours. They're not your work. They're not yours to influence. And you can try, but it would be like beating your head against the wall. So,
mm-hmm.
And the wisdom to know which are which, right?
Exactly.
And so, applying this to the relationships, if one senses that it will feel, you know, uncomfortable to others, then perhaps we will keep our exploration as more of our inner life, you know, not something that we are in any way sort of, you know, foisting on anybody,
mm-hmm.
you know. The young, I hesitate to generalize about age, but it's true, I think, that, you know, you hear this phrase, angry young man, you know, and it's that person who, they've got it all figured out and they want everyone else to know,
yeah,
right? But by time you get into middle age, you're going, well, I've got a lot of things figured out, but this is what works for me, and I'm not necessarily going to force it on anyone else.
And it works for me today. It
right.
may not work for me tomorrow, so I'm going to continue to question.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the greatest things I've come across lately, you've heard of this law of attraction. It's shown up in the book and the movie The Secret.
Mm-hmm.
It's also been discussed in a movie called What the Bleep Do We Know,
mm-hmm.
and many, many other books and articles.
It
and
sort
so
of
on.
Takes us back to the marketing issue that we were talking about earlier, but from
yeah.
a different bent.
But, you know, and I thought I knew the law of attraction.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, in a nutshell, it's that whatever you really focus your energy on, by talking about, thinking about, dwelling on, that's the thing you're going to call more of into your life.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought I understood this. And so I went around, for in my mind at least, saying, I want to be out of debt, I want to be out of debt, I want to be out of debt, I want to be out of debt. But what kept getting mentioned? Debt,
mm-hmm.
debt,
mm-hmm.
debt, debt. And so I've just had the consciousness-raising experience, you know, of that the thing to talk about is the richness, the abundance, the, you know, the flow of resources, you know. And you just don't say the D word. You know, that one's, you were talking about, you know, that there, well, this was you and me privately, that some words maybe should just be stricken from the language, like try.
Mm-hmm. Every time I hear the word try, I hear Yoda. I hear Yoda.
There is no try. Do or not
there
do.
There is no try. yeah, because, you know, when someone says, I'm going to try to be there,
yeah.
What they're telling you is, don't be disappointed when I don't show up.
Yeah. And there's exactly right. There's I've been through a number of personal growth programs, intensives, and so forth in the 80s and early 90s, and actually into 2000. And one of the concepts that was so fascinating and can be utterly frustrating, it was for me, was the concept that if you wanted to be somewhere else other than where you are, you would be there now. Apparently, that isn't where you want to be because you're here.
Right.
So you've made all of the choices that have put you here.
Exactly. And you know, many of these things, there, it's frustrating because that
it puts
it
the
really
responsibility
points to the personal
back
responsibility
on us.
Thing.
Yes.
It really puts the finger back on you,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very interesting. But, you know, and then the other part that I just got schooled on.
Mm-hmm.
Is that it's the feeling piece. It isn't enough to just talk about, you know, that my intention is to grow a retirement account that is just overflowing with such wealth that I will be able to share my wealth
mm-hmm.
far and wide. It's to feel how great it feels to dwell in that reality.
Mm-hmm.
It is a reality. It isn't the reality you're in yet, but you put yourself there and really feel, you know, how great that feels. Because apparently, down at our tiniest subatomic levels, we're all vibration.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we think these ways and talk these ways and really feel these ways, we're vibrating at some really joyous, you know, we're vibrating at the speed of joy.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds good, doesn't it?
It absolutely
Ooh,
does.
Ooh, I love the feel of that.
You raised two thoughts. One is the experiment that I believe it was the Japanese scientist did on water and the photographs thereof.
Yes, Emoto.
And number two is Greg Braden. We spoke with him last June, and he was talking about the heart and how they've been researching the energetics of the heart. And it goes to what you are speaking about, and that is the emotional connect to the thought. The thought really has no power.
Right.
The thought is just a thought.
Right.
That unless you have that, the inertia of the emotion.
Yeah.
To drive the thought.
Yeah.
The thought really doesn't go anywhere.
And, you know, isn't it interesting that Masaru Emoto, that his name is Emoto. It just sounds like emotion, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I just love that. And, you know, I thought I had the privilege of seeing Deepak Chopra recently, and he was speaking of the mind, and he said, where is the mind? It is throughout the body.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about how the brain produces neuropeptides.
Mm-hmm.
And that throughout our body are various kinds of cells, including, notably, the immune cells, are built with essentially a dock. They're actually called receptors. They are built to receive these, to fit together like puzzle pieces with these neuropeptides. Let's think about that for a minute. You mean my emotional neuropeptides course through my body and dock with my immune cells? Now ask yourself, do you think my emotion has anything to do with my healing, my sense of health, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And then the other thing he said was about our heart. And I wrote this down. He repeated the statistic twice. He said 65% of our heart cells are of this type that receive the neuropeptides. And so he said, when you say that your heart is filled with sadness or your heart is filled with love or joy, you are not speaking metaphorically. You're actually speaking to a great degree in a literal sort of sense.
Wow.
And he talked about the gut feelings.
Mm-hmm.
He said gut feelings, sure enough, down there in our gut are these receptors for our neuropeptides, you know, reading the emotional landscape. And then he said, he got a good laugh with this one. He said, you know, these lower parts of our mind, if you will, lower parts,
mm-hmm.
have not evolved so highly that they have begun to question themselves and doubt themselves.
Wow.
I mean, you know, we think of ourselves as being these highly evolved, you know, the neocortex, you know, we have these higher human brain functions, and we've made ourselves neurotic with them.
Yeah.
Well, when he said blah, 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 do you suppose he really meant that he wanted me to think that blah, 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 so that, you know, it's like we make ourselves nuts. But our gut is not like that. Our gut is very rudimentary. It says yes or no.
Mm-hmm.
It says, do I help this guy or do I run for my life?
Mm.
Right? Very interesting thought, but this idea that our mind is throughout our whole body, I would even argue, and I don't have a scientific leg to stand on, but my sense is that not only is our mind throughout our body, it actually extends out beyond our body, you know?
You know, there's a movie that's coming out with the actor who was in the lead in the Matrix series, and his name
is Keanu Reeves.
Thank you. And there's a preview that I saw the other morning or the other afternoon. Where he's hooked up to this machine, this lie detector, and the guy's asking him all of these various questions. You know, do you feel pain? And to every answer that he gives to the questions this gentleman is asking, he says, my body, blah, blah, blah,
right.
My body. He never says I. He says my body.
Right.
And so it's like the message is coming through loud and clear that I am not my body.
I am not my body. And you know, like this idea that we're all vibration,
mm-hmm.
and mostly space, you know, like on some, you know, if you look at molecules, you know, that they're mostly made up of space. And, you know, is it a wave or is it a particle? Well, it depends on if the question is a wave question or a particle question, you know. It gets pretty esoteric. But, you know, many people, and Peg, Dr. Peg, she my co-author in 50 Ways to Leave Your 40s, she explores this idea of consciousness in one of our chapters. The question being put, you know, many of the scientists of our day are saying not only what is consciousness, but where is it? You know, is it just firing of neurons inside our head? Is it a great collective energy out that permeates, you know, that we all plug into and also feed into? I mean, it's just real wonderful, you know, wonderful to think about. But mostly on a practical level, I know, and I can't always practice it, but 'cause habit change takes practice, practice, practice. It's true that old ways die hard, but neuroplasticity, the changeability of our brain, means that we can learn new tricks, even if we do think of ourselves as old dogs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, you know, to think of, oh, you know, you heard the experiment. They talk about this in What the Bleep Do We Know,
mm-hmm.
where they got all those people together that one summer in Washington, D.C., to just meditate on peace.
Mm-hmm.
Not to talk about it or go door-to-door being activists or any of that, just to sit collectively and meditate on peace. And sure enough, it brought the crime rate down in that city 23% that summer. And, you know, I really believe it. I believe it. And so when in our politics, if one candidate is talking to me about hope and the other is talking to me about fear, I just keep thinking, why do so many Americans choose to follow the one that's talking about fear. You know,
it's just, yeah, it is, and that's sort of a sad commentary on where we are today. I've been focusing these programs on new paradigms for a new world, creating the kind of world that I want to live in.
Yeah, and being that does the not, change you want to see in the world.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And it's encompassing. It's not exclusive. It's not exclusionary.
Right.
It's not that, well, and unless you believe it the way that I believe it, you can't be a part of my new world. Wrong. Right. I want you a part of my new world. I want us all to be able to coexist and have the things that we say we want, be with the people we say we want to be with to achieve the things. I mean, I was hoping that in the 21st century, we would be flying around like the Jetsons. Now, granted, that is a material, that's more of a materialistic concept.
But it's still early in the 21st century.
Well, that's true. It's still early. But I am excited about the prospects with especially many of the guests that we've had on, like Greg Braden and Barbara Marx Hubbard, and I'm hoping one day maybe even to have Deepak Chopra on this program to talk about his concepts, especially when it comes to what we've been discussing. And we have actually hit upon all four of the main chapters in the book dealing with body, mind, soul, and heart.
How about that?
And the fact is that none of these four elements are separate.
Exactly.
And the consciousness concept that you say that Dr. Peggy talks about, I think that it is, my belief is, I don't know, is that it is all pervasive. It's permeating every energetic, atomic, subatomic particle that exists in our universe and or all of the various dimensions and on infinitum.
And you know what? It doesn't. Actually, I can answer my own question about why so many people vote by way of fear instead of hope. You know, all that fear that people are feeling, it permeates, you know, it does, it permeates. And but I to bring it to a more hopeful place, I really do sense, I really do feel, you know, we talk in the book about inching toward a tipping point, you know, that sometimes our progress is linear, just like one hard-won inch at a time, but that things can happen that begin to be more geometric, you know, in their progression. And I do have a sense with the, you know, with the release of just a number of things, you know, understanding of global consciousness. You know, the when humankind landed on the moon and could first, or at least got out into outer space and could photograph the Earth, that's when the ecological movement just was born in a big way.
Yeah,
it's like suddenly there was an, you know, we called it ecology back in the 70s, and now it's more called environmentalism. But it had to do with seeing this beautiful blue jewel of a planet without any country lines, dividing it up into bits.
And one of the other elements, too, that you've raised is in terms of turning to individuals who are giving us these various messages, whether they be of hope or of fear. The other aspect of the new paradigms is that it is up to us as individuals, that these individuals, they will say and they will do what they will say and do. However, we must take responsibility to achieve the things that we want.
Right. And, that
and that's
the
what
way
it comes
we
down to.
React. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And if we react with huffing and puffing and isn't it terrible, you know, the way they blah, 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 it's like law of attraction says, don't even mention that. Just don't even give that any oxygen.
Yeah. Well, I sure appreciate the opportunity that you have given us to delve into the insights of both yourself and Dr. Peggy Spencer, co-authors of 50 Ways to Leave Your 40s, Living It Up in Life's Second Half.
Yeah, I think we've given some new meaning to living it up, huh?
Well, I hope so. And what I'm hoping is maybe we'll be able to give that subtitle a different phrase, because if we can start telling ourselves and ourselves, and our cells,
ourselves,
a different message.
I
maybe
like that.
We're still in the first half, and maybe when we reach 100, we reach 100 years of age, and then maybe that'll be the second half, because there is historical evidence to show that human beings have lived for hundreds of years.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, you were talking earlier about, you know, how old do you feel? Mm. And, you know, my mother said that it wasn't until she was in her late 70s and she was lying in a hospital bed and looking around at all the machines and bleep, bleep, you know, mm-hmm. monitors and everything she was hooked up. And she said that was her first in her entire life. She was like 77 or something, and she said, this is the first time I have really felt old. She said before this, you know, she had the aches and pains, but her spirit still felt like it always had, like she all, you know, like it always had, even when she was a kid or in her 20s or in college or, you know. Interesting.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you so much for sharing your time
likewise.
And your thoughts. And we really do appreciate the opportunity to, as I say, delve into your heart and mind and hear a little bit about what you have to offer through the book. Once again, folks, it is 50 Ways to Leave Your 40s, Living It Up in a Life's Second Half. Again, my guest is Sheila Key and her co-author, Peggy Spencer, MD. And again, it's you know, it applies throughout. I mean, we haven't touched on any steps that you should follow. It's just these are all processes that we go through, and here's some helpful hints with some incredible depth, as folks have stated through their reading of the various bits, as you talked about, to help them through. And I guess my final question in the last 30 seconds here is, what is your ultimate accomplishment through this book that you want to achieve?
Well, I really hope that people will be inspired to do new things, because by doing the new things, you know, you really are growing yourself. And if they're amused along the way, get a chuckle, you know, laughter's good. Laughter's good for us.
That truly helps. It beats that heartache that people who actually have died. Of a lonely heart, if you will,
great.
A broken heart. And we go back to your example before from the lecture you spoke of with Deepak Chopra about those 65% of the cells.
Yes.
Again, I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Richard. This has been just a great delight.
Well, thank you. Stay on the line. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story. Next week, our guest is going to be James Seiden. Now, he's going to speak from, I'd have to say, from a negative perspective as far as your future and your career. The title of the book is called Self-Destruct, but it's referring to your career. Maybe we'll refer to it as building a new career, if that's what you want to do. You don't have to be stuck for your entire lifetime in what you or your father or your grandfather did if it isn't really what you want to do. That's one of the greatest lessons my father ever gave me. He says, get into something you love because you're going to be doing it for a long time. In this job? I hope so. And I hope you'll join us next Saturday at this same time for Tell Me Your Story, 3 p.m., and listen live on the internet. Until next Saturday, love to long.